All right, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Christian, and this is The Most High Show, and this is a special episode. We are going to be talking about a sensitive topic, so trigger warning, parental advisory, if you're eating, maybe don't eat. No, I think you can eat during this.
Yeah, you can eat.
We're going to be talking about suicide, and we're going to talk about some of the myths, and we're also going to talk about personal experiences with that. With me today is my brother Joseph. He is sitting in the decadent seat of service. We have an in-studio audience. Chad's on the ones and twos. Leslie's doing quality control. We got two rooms of audiences here. We got a back room for viewing also. And so it's good to be alive, and it's good to be able to talk about this very sensitive topic. So
amen.
This is The Most High Show.
Welcome to The Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is The Most High Show.
Let's start with some statistics, and then we're going to kind of let this free flow. We're going to talk about some myths, but let's start with statistics. So it takes a while for them to gather statistics. Hey, we're on delay.
Delay.
Yeah.
Delay.
Delay. It takes a while for people to gather statistics. So
right.
The best statistics we have right now are from 2022, so 2 years. And the most common number that I saw was 49,000 people die by suicide in 2022 in America. That's one death every 11 minutes. That's shocking. That's a pretty large number. So by the time we finish this podcast, you know, if this number's still going, you know, that's a handful there. And now, I don't know how they got these numbers. Must have been like a survey or something. But 13.2 million people had seriously thought about suicide. 3.8 million. Okay, let me just back it. 13 million people seriously thought about suicide.
That's a lot.
In 2022. 13 million. 3.8 million people made a plan for suicide. And then 1.6 million people attempted. Okay, so that's good. There's some people that aren't getting it right.
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 That's good. That's one thing that's good to get wrong. And then the suicide rate among males in 2022 was approximately four times higher than the rate among females. Hmm. Males make up for 50% of the population, but nearly 80% of suicides. That's a lot. Yeah. And so I want to jump right into this first myth. And that's kind of like why we're doing this. So this is from the Mayo Clinic. And there's the myth, which is talking about suicide increases the chance someone will act on it. All right. And so that is a myth. Talking about suicide may reduce rather than increase suicidal ideation. It improves mental health related outcomes and the likelihood that a person will seek treatment. It improves that likelihood. Opening this conversation helps people to find an alternative view of their existing circumstances. If someone is in crisis or depressed, asking if they are thinking about suicide can help. Asking directly using those words. And so don't hesitate to start the conversation.
Right.
That's what we're doing. So you have Joseph sitting here. Just tell us a little bit about who you are. What's a day in the life of Joseph like today?
My name is Joseph Hicks. I am a grateful person. I was going to make a joke out of it. I'm not in recovery. I've never been in any trouble or anything like that. But that's not the case. I wish that was my story, but it's not. I have 300 days today free from all mind and mood altering substances.
Congratulations.
Man, talking to somebody, what you just read, man, like talking to somebody can help change the view of your circumstances. That's really big, because 301 days ago, I was sitting in a Quick Trip parking lot fixing to shoot a half a gram of fentanyl And I'm not an opiate addict. That wasn't my thing. So I knew what the outcome of that was going to be. Mm. And my brother Reeves Jordan pulled into that Quick Trip. And because of him pulling into that Quick Trip, I'm able to be a husband today and a father today. And I'm able to come on this podcast and talk about this uncomfortable topic. And that changed the view of my circumstances, right? Here we are 300 days in, and we just announced today opening up a recovery residence for men who suffer with substance abuse issues. So I'm able to keep what I got by giving it away. I'm almost through with the 12 steps. Man, life is beautiful even when it's not. I have no complaints whatsoever. After 19 years in prison and 5 prison visits and losing my whole family to the disease of addiction through suicide and overdose and cirrhosis, dude, I have absolutely no complaints. I have a heart absolutely full of gratitude.
Yeah. All right.
And Most High helped me in my most vulnerable moments, dude, with 90 days sober, took me and showed me a new way to live.
Yeah. And it was a egg sandwich.
It was an egg sandwich. Matter of fact,
Reeves was going to get.
Yes. And didn't y'all actually eat the egg sandwich too?
Yeah, he brought me one. I never had one before.
And then I did a video where I was at the same Quick Trip where all that took place.
Yeah.
And bought the same sandwich that saved my life.
Quick Trip sandwiches saved lives.
Quick Trip sandwiches. Thank God Reeves has that way appetite.
We're trying to get a sponsorship.
Quick Trip, we're here.
We're here. Or hello, at least world. Free nicotine.
Yeah.
And Monsters.
Zens and Ons.
Yes.
And Monsters.
And Monsters.
Yes.
We're here.
We're here, bro. We're in the building.
Yes. So you talked about losing family. And I think that, like, if we were to poll, like, the room, I think, like, most people have been affected by suicide at some level. Anyone in this room, anyone been affected by suicide? Family member, loved one, friend? Right. So I think it's, you know, everyone's been affected by it on some level, and you had like a really someone really close to you. Just tell us a little bit about that.
So, June the 10th of 2022, my brother cried out for help, and I guess I'm kind of jumping ahead a little bit because the next myth is talking about people who cry out for help or just seeking attention.
Yeah.
And that wasn't the case. That's not the case. My brother's living proof that that is a myth because he cried out for help. He was in the pod right next to me in Gwinnett County Detention Center, and he cried out for help, and the deputy thought he was bluffing, backed him up into the room, shut and locked the door, and didn't do another security check for 2 hours, and when he did, my brother was hanging. Mm. So June the 10th, 2022, my brother took his own life. And then almost 2 years to the day, thank God again for Most High, man. My cousin, who suffered in silence from the disease of addiction, he took his own life in the same way. He hung himself. My dad, Vietnam veteran, had several suicide attempts, PTSD. So it's And also, man, somebody that I picked up a white chip with last year, and I also just participated in an Out of Darkness suicide prevention walk, Jacob Villegas. I know your mom and your grandma are watching this, too. Suicide has touched me in a very real, very personal way on several times, but especially, like, with my brother and my cousin, man, because it could have been prevented. It could have been.
Yeah. That's one of the reasons why we're talking about it. When we first broached this topic, we talked about, I was saying that suicide is kind of like, it's like a campfire smoke. And if you're near the campfire, you get the smoke on you and it's on you for days, you know,
right.
It's in your hair and you can't help but notice and know that you were by a campfire. And that's kind of what suicide is. When somebody close to you, even somebody who might not be immediately close to you, maybe they're one or two people removed, it's someone you might know, it still gets on you. There's something about it. I can remember friends and people who committed suicide and thinking the first thought in my head is like, oh, I get it. I totally understand where that person was at that moment. I totally get it. And then that thought kind of like sticks around for a few days, you know, And you called them clusters, suicide clusters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You know, after losing my brother and my cousin, anytime something, you know, when it affects somebody close to you or somebody that you know, it's one thing. But when it hits you directly, and suicide is classified as a violent death, you tend to go down a rabbit hole, especially with these now. You know, we have these at our disposal, so you can go down a rabbit hole with these statistical researches and black holes. And there's been several instances in small towns all throughout this country and throughout history where one person commits suicide, and the next thing you know, it triggers something happens, the campfire smoke. I think when my brother committed suicide, there for a minute, if it weren't for my higher power, Jesus Christ, dude, I probably would have went down the same path, because there for a minute, I was in a very, very dark place.
Yeah.
I think that triggers those thoughts. I think when somebody actually pulls the trigger, figuratively speaking, I think it triggers something. I think it triggers feelings of worthlessness in people that are associated with that person. Like, man, I totally get why that person's there. And it forces you to focus an inward look at yourself. Like, man, my life's pretty meaningless too.
Yeah.
But, suicide clusters are a real thing. I don't really know I think it's a spirit. I really think that there's a spirit attached to suicide that causes these things to happen. I don't really know, man.
Yeah. There's something.
There's definitely something to it.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the reasons why talking about it, and it's a taboo subject, right? But if 13 million people have seriously considered suicide, right? It's kind of like the elephant in the room. Like, why aren't we talking about this?
Right.
Right? Like, this is something that should be brought up, you know, like, I don't know, like in if you've been in recovery long enough, you know, it's everyone, you know, it's like, everyone's like, you get up a bad day and you just think, oh, forget it. Like,
yeah.
You know, I'm just going to kill myself. And so it's brought up like jokingly and in those ways, but to talk about it seriously, like we are today. And I think if somebody that you know has committed suicide, is to talk openly about it.
Yeah.
You know, we did a documentary called Megan's Prayer. It's the first documentary we did with Mitchell.
Phenomenal.
And that covered co-occurring disorder, which is addiction and a mental health disorder, and the correlating rate of suicide with that, right? And Britt Paramore was one of the counselor, and he was interviewed in it, and he said, you know, people don't think they're qualified to talk about this subject, right? And if someone's reaching out to you and talking to you about this, it's because they think you're qualified to talk about this subject. And you don't always have to go straight to, let me refer you to a counselor because this is out of my depth.
Right.
Because I think part of it is like wanting to be seen, wanting to be heard, wanting to be connected with, you know, and to speak about it openly, right? And we would go and play this film in treatment centers, sober livings, and we'd play the film, and then afterwards we would run a group. It's kind of like a Most High meeting we would do. And then I would ask the groom, who here has ever seriously considered suicide? And in a room full of people in recovery, 95% of the room raised their hand.
Mm-hmm.
And you would get kind of people looking at each other like, wait, you?
Right.
So even in this environment of recovery where we're so open and honest with each other, we're not talking about this openly and honestly. It's like, okay, I don't want to say that. You know, there's a shame and a stigma associated with it that we don't want to like bring it up.
Man, right? It's crazy because me and Reeves, after my cousin took his life back in June, we did a suicide awareness meeting, and at his Tapped In Recovery meeting, and there's probably 100 people showed up. Man, it was a lot of people. It was a good turnout, and I asked the same question. I was like, man, you know, to start this out, who in this room has ever had any thoughts or ideations of committing suicide? And just off the top of my head, I would say approximately 90% of the room raised their hand. Mm. But, and there was the same dynamic. Like, the people were looking at each other like, man, you've had that?
Right.
And in this room were two 16-year-olds, one of them being my nephew, who last year shot himself, you know. And but two of the 16-year-olds, one, my nephew shot himself. The other 16-year-olds had a gun to his head, crying. Like, it's a thing. And there is, I think there's just as much, if not worse, the stigma attached to that type of issue as there is addiction itself. Yeah. And I think most of us have had those thoughts and ideations because you hit that bottom of the barrel. You've screwed over everybody that you love and care about.
Yeah.
You feel like you're doing the world a favor. Like, I feel like I'm ridding you of a burden. Yeah, you're going to hurt from this. Yeah, this is going to be a hard time to get through, you dealing with me taking my life like this. But in the bigger picture, the grand scheme of things, you're going to be so much better off because I can't hurt you anymore. Yeah. This will be the last time I hurt you.
Right. That's, a lot of people might be thinking that. Yeah, I know that, like, this is going to sound messed up. No. I've been probably more suicidal in recovery than I was when I was using, you know, because I had my drugs.
Yeah.
I had my solution. And if I didn't have my solution of preference, you know, there was a list of other ones that would do.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so it wasn't until I removed that, you know, synthetic solution from my life.
You gotta feel the feels.
And I started to face myself. That was when it was overwhelming, right? And there was plenty of times where, you know, plans were laid out, what I would do, where I would go, how I would accomplish it. And finding someone to talk to about it openly, you know, pulls that power away. So that's the first myth that I think we've clearly debunked, that talking about it increases the chance someone will act on it. So the second myth is people who talk about suicide are just seeking attention. And that's common. You know, a lot of people, you know, even if you're bringing it up to seek attention, you know, there's something very
why
serious
is that
about
the go-to?
That.
Yeah. Why is that the immediate go-to?
Yeah. Yeah. Why are you picking that as what you're trying to get attention for? So in the case of your brother, that wasn't taken seriously.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to name a name, but there's somebody on my network, and Jamie, you know who I'm talking about, little brother. He talks about it quite often, and a lot of people think that he's not serious. But there have been times when he wasn't answering the phone for people, and I'd be on the phone with Jamie, and I'm thinking, when as I'm pulling up to the house to go wake him up to go to work, that I'm about to walk in his room and find him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I see the seriousness in it. Like, and like you just said, okay, there probably is a dynamic of people. I've seen people in prison say they're suicidal to get shipped to a different prison because they owe $20,000 to this organization and they can't pay it, so it's a catch-out move. Yeah. I've seen that. But you don't know.
Or people go into a hospital and say they're suicidal so they can get put on a 72-hour hold.
Right.
And then try to
find. Or, you know, crazily enough, there's no certified. Like, I've seen people. My brother, before he got arrested and committed suicide, tried to go get help. He went to Viewpoint. He's like, I'm suffering from meth addiction. I need help. They're like, oh, you need to go to detox. He tried to go into sober living. They told him to go into detox. He tried to go to detox. I'm like, look, I got meth. I have a problem with meth. I'm trying to get help. He's like, oh, we don't take people with meth addiction. Mm. We don't detox. There's no detox for meth. You just sleep and eat.
Mm-hmm.
So then he's like, well, what do I do then? 10-13. So, like, I guess there is a dynamic of people that aren't really dealing with suicidal thoughts that say that. But like you just said, why is that the go-to?
Yeah.
There's something there. There's something there.
Yeah.
And it's better safe than sorry, right? Like, you don't get to pick and choose who's being serious or who's not.
Right.
Take everybody serious.
Yeah, and I think talking about it in a serious way and openly to bring those things out, right? I think a lot of people say they want to kill themselves, and I know it's certainly been true for me, and what I really want to kill is a part of myself.
Mm.
There's something in me that's no longer serving me, that maybe kept me alive when I was a kid or running the streets, but now causes chaos. I want to kill that part of me.
Right.
And so it's not that I want to die in those moments, but there's a very serious part of me that I want to kill off.
And you're willing to take all of it just to take that part out.
Yeah.
Because there's no other way in that moment.
Yeah. And so I think like that, being able to talk openly about that and to say, okay, do you, or is there a part of you that you want to kill off? What is that part of you? And you don't have to create a solution in one conversation, but to give somebody the opportunity to speak openly and honestly when given that opportunity. It's a sacred giving, right, of somebody to come up to you and go, this is how I feel. So people were talking about it's not. So people who die from suicide have often told someone about not wanting to live anymore or that they don't see a future. It's always important to take it seriously when someone talks about it. It's important to be kind and sensitive and ask direct questions, right? Are you thinking about hurting yourself? Are you thinking about suicide? And using that word, right? Not dancing around the subject. Do you have access to weapons or other objects to harm yourself? So taking it seriously, when you ask those real hard-hitting questions, I think it becomes very real for the person.
Yeah.
All right, so next myth is suicide can't be prevented. That is a myth. Suicide is preventable but unpredictable. Most people who contemplate suicide often experience intense emotional pain, hopelessness, and have a negative view of their life or their future. So suicide is a product of genes, mental illness, and environmental risk factors. Interventions targeted to treat psychiatric and substance use illness can save lives. But it has to be talked about.
Yeah.
It has to be brought up into the open, which I think is what we're doing here.
I think that's why the suicide rate, in my humble opinion, is so much higher amongst us than it is women. Because there's this stereotype, there's this image that the world has created on what it is to be a man. You tough it out.
I'm fine.
You thug it out. I'm fine.
I'm good.
Just like the doctor, everything's fine.
Yeah.
When really everything's falling apart.
Yeah.
You know, and just like when a man asks another man, how you doing, bro? I'm good. And really your whole life's falling apart.
Right.
There's this image that the world has projected on us as men on what it means to be a man, what defines a man. Oh, you don't cry in front of other people. Man, I cry in front of everybody. Mm-hmm. You don't talk about your problems. You tough it out. You go to work, you provide, you come home, and you deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And we have this thing that we're supposed to live up to, that image that the world has told us what we're supposed to be like. And so we suffer in silence. As a whole race, or not a race, as a whole gender, we suffer in silence because of that. Because of this falsehood that our forefathers and our forefathers' forefathers have told us what it means to be a man, whereas women are more apt to start their group text or to call their sister and cry together and talk about their stuff. We don't do that, dude.
Yeah.
We don't do that.
Until we have to. Yeah. I think there's some correlation that I read once, that the more sophisticated a society becomes, the higher the suicide rate gets.
Oh yeah.
So like in the thing that I'd watched about it was that in the Roman civilization, as it was reaching its height, that they had a high suicide rate. And so there's something to do with this video asserted that it had something to do with the comparison, right? Of like, okay, I'm trying to strive to get to this certain place, and I can't get to this certain place, or this person is at that place and I'm not at that place. And so there is a thing about, you know, I'm old school. I was brought up old school. You know, you sacrifice yourself for your family. You know, you do what you got to do, right? And I think there is a certain degree of that as a man. It is what it is. Like, you do what you need to do. But to do it in silence and to suffer and to not have anyone to connect with and communicate with, you know, like I've shared, like every time I share my story, Mitchell, somebody we both know, you know, he was somebody who came into my life and we started talking on the phone, and he's You on the documentary, you're like, he's zen. He's zen.
Yeah.
But he's a lot of whirlpool underneath, you know?
Yeah.
And so, but he would openly talk to me. We would check in daily, and he would openly talk to me about all this stuff that was going on in his head. And I'm like, damn, all that's going on in my head.
Right.
But at that stage of my recovery, I thought if it wasn't directly related to me having the desire to use, then it wasn't related to recovery.
Mm.
And so I wouldn't talk about it. So I had all this jacked up thoughts in my head that I thought I was alone with, you know, and it was him exemplifying this authentic relationship that I realized, oh, I can share what's going on in my head. And I started to get relief from those things because it was shown to me that I could do that, right? By another man who takes providing for his family very seriously, who takes giving back to his community very seriously. And I think that's what a lot of people, it's the strong ones, you know, that you kind of got to like, no one checks on the strong ones because they're like, right. Oh, they're good, you know? I have a thing that if somebody pops in my head 3 times, I call them.
Is that why you never call me?
That's why I never call you. You get 2. You never hit the 3rd.
I almost made it, man.
Yeah. Because I never know. I never know, like, why right. are they popping in my head, right? I don't know. But if it's 3 times, that happened, Lena. I hit her up. She's like, what? I was like, yeah, you came up in my mind 3 times, so I just thought I'd reach out. She's like, that's weird. But it was. Like, I do it. It's just something that I've done for years since I got into recovery, because you never know.
And it can't hurt, right?
It can't hurt.
Like, what if something does happen and you didn't?
Right.
That's something else you got to carry.
Yeah, somebody, a close friend of mine, father, husband, committed suicide, I think a little over 2 years ago.
I remember you
and
telling
me. He was somebody that we would talk often, not in recovery, but we would talk often, and then we just lost contact, you know, as you do. And yeah, I had that thought in my head of like, damn, you know, maybe I could have reached out or just said, hey, what's up? How you doing?
Yeah.
You know? So there's other guys that are like that now that I'm always checking in on, you know? And sometimes the calls don't get answered and they don't get returned, or the text doesn't get returned, but it's not about me.
No.
You know, it's about, I want to try to let people know you got somebody who gets it. In those moments, you have somebody to reach out to. Hopefully, you'll reach out to.
I think, you know, I was told something when I first got sober. Don't wait until the crap hits the fan to pick up the phone. Mm. Pick up the phone when things are going amazing. That way, when life does life, and it will, life gets real lifey sometimes. Life going life, no matter what.
Yeah.
And that way, when life does life, it's automatic.
You have those connections
yes,
already.
Yes, man. And that saved me, honestly. Like, and digging deeper than just scratching the surface, like calling somebody, hey, how you doing, man? You good? All right. Talk to you later. Just checking in. No, like, how are you really doing?
Yeah.
Like, what's really going on? Yeah. My sponsor, he's going through a pretty bad relationship situation right now. And we've got a sponsorship chat where it's like, 15 of us. And as soon as that problem hit, and he's not a vulnerable person, like he's cut from a rough cloth from the bayous of Louisiana, like mm-hmm. no frills, no cut, no BS. Yeah, guarantee Justin Wilson, definitely personified.
Yeah.
In the kitchen and everything. but immediately, day one, when the crap show hit, he put in that group chat, hey, look, this is what I'm going through. I'm really depressed. If you see me, I could really use a hug. Mm. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
Because, man, that vulnerability in moments like that, the first thing I want to do is, like, shut down. Like, when me and her have our stuff, I just want to shut down from everybody. Don't call me. I don't want to talk.
Yeah.
I just want to sit here and binge watch Netflix and sit in my head.
Yeah.
And that can be dangerous, dude.
Yeah.
That can send me into a really dark place really, really fast. My mind is a very dangerous place to be, man. And, yeah. and another... To quote my sponsor, your brain is like a playground in a bad neighborhood. Never go alone and never go at night. Mm. And that saved me from myself on more than one occasion. Because I can justify doing some dumb crap pretty quick, like.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, what your sponsor just hit on before we even sat down, the spiritual suicide. that precedes the physical suicide every time, just like the relapse starts way before we get high.
Before you actually use.
Yeah, dude, there's a series of events that take place that lead up to the actual somebody taking their life.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, identifying your warning signs the same with the relapse. Like, my mind has went down a rabbit hole with that ever since he mentioned it. Like, man, that's so true. Because when I was there 10 months ago, there was a series of things that happened that led up to me being in that Quick Trip parking lot. It didn't just one thing happened that Monday morning and I'm like, all right, I'm done. I'm checking out of this life. No, there was a series of events, boom, 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 that started off small and just got gradually bigger and bigger and bigger that led up to me being to the point where I was ready to end everything. And I think knowing those signs, I think that's crucial.
Yeah.
The spiritual suicide.
And knowing that, you got to know that inside yourself.
Yeah, right? And being willing to share that with somebody.
Yeah.
That way, if you start to exhibit those signs, you might not notice them.
Yeah.
But if you've shared that with somebody in your network, then maybe that person notices them and calls you on your BS. Hey, look.
Yeah.
I'm noticing a behavior pattern here.
Right.
Something's changing.
We all got blind spots, and this is just a human condition.
Yeah.
Right? You don't see pride in the mirror.
Mm-mm.
You know? And so we have blind spots, and that's why community and connection is so important just for a human being. Us in recovery, I think it's a gift that we have because our life got burned to shit, so we got to have this, you know? And we know the consequences if we don't engage in an authentic community. And for other people, the consequences might not be as apparent or as dramatic until they become one of the 49,000.
Right.
So another myth here is people who take their own lives are selfish, cowardly, or weak. So the fact is that people die of suicide by choice. Often people who die of suicide experience significant emotional pain and find it difficult to consider different views or see a way of out of their situation. Even though the reasons are quite complex, suicide is commonly associated with psychiatric illness such as depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, and substance use. So usually there's something underlining.
Definitely.
That's going on. And some people might be an undiagnosed condition.
I think, you know, I don't know where that myth originally started from. Probably, I would say, I think it's safe to say that somebody who lost somebody to suicide in a moment of anger, because I went through that with both instances with my brother and my cousin. My brother was my last immediate family member that I had left on this earth. Like, we had just lost our mom 9 months before. And a week before he did this, he posted on my mom's Facebook, and Jamie remembered this. He said, man, don't worry about Joseph. I've got him. Mm. And we made a pact, like, hey, look, we're in this thing together now. I'm not going to leave you. So when he did it, dude, I was angry. I was so angry. But, and here we go back to the man thing for a minute. A lot of times when men show anger, it's really just hurt.
Yeah.
It's hurt manifested because we don't feel comfortable.
We don't know with how to that hurt be thing. Sad.
Yeah, we don't know how to be sad.
Right.
We
just go right to anger.
Yeah, just go right to anger. That's the go-to, man. And I think, you know, so I went through those feelings of, man, that's so selfish. How could you do me like this?
Yeah.
Why would you do me like this?
Yeah.
But then, like, you know, taking a step back, I don't think it's selfless. I don't think it's selfish. I don't think it's cowardly. If anything, it's almost the opposite. It's a selfless act in that person's mind in that moment. You know, it has nothing to do with anybody else. It has to do with the fact that that person has reached a breaking point to where nobody else matters in that moment. They're tired. They're tired, man.
Yeah.
My cousin, dude, he went the day before. He went to church and got baptized in a river. Like, this was planned. Like, he knew he was making peace with his maker. He was doing all these things. But yet the cries for help went unanswered. He told people, and I'm not going to name names, but he told people, like, hey, this is what I'm feeling.
Mm-hmm.
No, no, it's just a phase. Mm-hmm. You'll get through it. It's just a, you know, you'll get through this. Those cries went unanswered. But I don't believe it's selfless. I mean, selfish, dude. I think that person in that moment is tired of being selfish, or what they perceive to be selfish. And I think, honestly, dude, I think in their mind, they're just doing everybody a huge favor.
Yeah.
This will be the last time I hurt you.
Or like, you know, the times that I've seriously come close to it, for me, it was the pain of everything was just too much.
Too severe.
And I'm just sick and tired.
Yeah.
Not being able to find a way out of this.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, okay, I know I can't go get high.
Right.
I can go get high, but I know it ain't gonna work, you know, because eventually I'm gonna come down.
All right.
You know?
And then it's just gonna be worse.
And then it's gonna be worse.
It's gonna be worse.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, that's not an option, you know? And so it's like, but there's this thing going on inside of me.
That you can't stop.
That I can't stop. That I can't talk about enough ways. I can't, you know, try 700 types of therapy, you know, freaking do everything possible. Why am I still like this? What is going on? I can't take it anymore. And that's literally like my mindset in those moments. You know, we talked on the phone, you know, like April 27th. I remember that date because that was, you know, I was seriously considering it this year, you know, and it was exactly because of that, because it was like, why can't I rid myself of this thing?
Right.
You know, it's almost like this monster that's in me that's causing havoc consistently. 100%. And I can't shut this motherfucker up.
Yeah.
You know? And so that's like the extreme that I'm going to is like, I know how to shut him up.
For good.
For good.
Right.
You know? And it was probably the closest that I'd ever been to that moment. And I reached out to somebody who I don't talk to all the time, but for some reason, that's just who popped in my head. And I reached out. And I was straightforward with it, you know. And I can't remember what they said. It was a lot of God stuff. And I wasn't expecting God stuff from this person.
That's how he shows up.
Yeah. And, it was just, I think what it was, I think I reached out to him because it's okay to be in pain.
Yeah.
Like, you're not a bad person because you're in pain or because you have this monster inside of you. You know, that's not the only part of you.
Right.
There's this aspect to you. But there's this all this other stuff. And when we're in these moments, when I was in these moments, I can't see the good that I've done.
Right.
You know? Like, I can go and see every other human and immediately see the God in that person.
Yeah.
And then I look in the mirror and I see everything but God, you know?
Yes.
And so having to, for me, it was about, okay, accepting these parts of myself. These parts of myself exist.
Yeah.
And now what? And for me, it was important to accept that the parts existed because for so much of my recovery, I tried to fight these parts of myself and deny it.
And that doesn't make them go
put
away.
Put on piety or put on religion and do it the way it's wrote in the book. And if I show up like that and act as if, then these things don't really exist.
The fake it till you make it thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it didn't work for me.
No.
You know? And it wasn't until I had to accept, okay, these are the things, right, that are part of me. It's in there. When I accepted it, it's like I could see it more accurately. I could see it as a part of the complex universe that is this human being named Christian,
yeah,
right?
Right.
That, okay, this is just a piece. And that was really helpful to me. And I think that's why I reached out to that guy, because I knew, maybe subconsciously, I knew that he knew those parts of me and still loved me, right? And that meant a lot. And we need that reflected back to us. You know, I find myself on the phone with people always like having to reflect back, okay, like, you know, you're a year into this. Where were you a year ago? And as soon as you just say that to somebody, they go, oh, yeah, a year ago I was shooting, you know,
dope
behind Dairy Queen, you know.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, this is actually not a bad problem.
No.
You know? We need that reflection back.
100%. Dude, I always go to Jamie. She's my go-to. She's my number one fan who's held me down in my darkest days. And, so I can't wait to tell her about things that are happening, these awesome, amazing things. Because there's a part of me, that scared, insecure little boy with abandonment issues who was abused as a child that never got that love, needs that validation, mm-hmm. you know? And I get that from her. And I need that. I need to be reminded that I'm... Can we cuss on this show? Or?
Yeah, I've been cussing.
I need to be reminded that I'm not a piece of shit, dude.
Right.
I need to be reminded of that. I need to be reminded that I'm not the convict. I'm not the jack boy, gangbanger, drug addict. I'm not that person. And I need to be reminded of that. And sometimes that takes words of affirmation. Sometimes it's just looking at that precious little boy sitting on that couch. And people in my network, my brother Brian, who's been there with me also through my darkest days and through very, very, very early recovery, who celebrate my successes just as much, if not more, than I do my own. I need to be reminded of that, dude, because I didn't get that. There's that part of me was starved yeah. as a child.
I don't know which how to do it healthy. You know, I'm either like the shit.
Yeah,
or I
bro.
Shit.
And I think you know, there's a.
I don't know. What's the bro, there's yeah. no.
That, yeah. That's a bro. That's man. That's amazing that you just said that because, you know, I have an ego problem, and I was just telling Jamie yesterday. I'm like, man, it's hard to not have an ego when you've never been known for anything but death and destruction and destroying everything around you and self-destructing and crashing and burning and betraying and hurting everybody. Yeah. And then all of a sudden something shifts and you're like, your name is mentioned in circles
yeah.
of good people who are doing good things. And like Joseph's doing these amazing things. I'm like,
yeah,
put on this. Yeah. I want to beat my chest a little bit. Up. Like, yeah. you know what I mean? Like, yeah. honestly, dude, like, you just said it. I don't know. I'm either I'm the shit or I'm a piece of shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Finding that happy medium.
Yeah.
God, that's dude. That's a whole nother show right there, bro. Yeah. Good God.
All right, so let's do.
that was dope, dude.
Thank you.
Very well said, Christian.
Okay, so I thought this was interesting. Barriers or bridges, safe firearm storage or other actions that reduce access to lethal methods of suicide don't work.
Hold on, say that again.
So this is a myth. The myth is that barriers on bridges, safe firearm storage, and other actions that reduce access to lethal methods of suicide don't work. That's the myth. That someone's going to find a way no matter what. But the fact is that limiting access to lethal means of harms, such as firearms, is one of the most straightforward strategies to decrease the chance of suicide. And I can remember, like, in... You know, one of the moments of someone being like, dude, you need to get the gun out of your house. Like, why do you even have that? If this is how your mental state is, dude, you should not be able to just walk in your closet and grab it. Many suicide attempts are a result of impulsive decisions. And I know that's true. Like, in the moments on April 27th, it was this, it's like this energy that vibrates from my core.
Right.
And there's a split second of like, going to do it or not going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's impulsive in some ways, you know, and then it's like if that moment passes and you haven't done it.
Then is that really the answer?
Yeah.
That's a good point, dude, because when you were first reading the myth, I'm like, man, that kind of is a myth. You know, barrier on a bridge, I'm just going to go find something else to jump off of or locking the gun up. But the gun is very impulsive, whereas if I take the time to actually go get this rope, find somewhere, you know, not to get too dark here, but like my mind might change in that brief 2 minutes it takes me to walk to the shed to actually act out that ideation.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, maybe.
Separating someone from a lethal means can provide a person with some time to think before harming themselves. All right. And this last myth that we're going to go through, which is suicide always occurs without warning. Would you hear that? We never saw this.
No.
We never thought. That person? There are almost always warning signs. So here are some common signs. Being preoccupied. And this is not just for somebody else, but this is for yourself. If these are some things. Being preoccupied with death or dying or violence. pretty much every American TV show. Changing regular routine, including eating or sleeping patterns. Developing personality changes or being severely anxious or agitated, particularly when experiencing some of the warning signs listed above. Doing risky or self-destructive things, such as using drugs or driving recklessly. Feeling trapped or hopeless about a situation. Getting the means to take your own life, such as buying a gun or stockpiling guns or starting to make a real plan. Giving away belongings or getting affairs in order when there's no logical explanation for doing this. These are all common signs. Having mood swings, such as being emotionally high one day and deeply discouraged the next. Every alcoholic I know.
Yeah, I was about to say, well, maybe I need to
put you on watch. Increasing use of alcohol or drugs. Saying goodbye to people as if they won't be seen again. I think I texted you once, like, I love you, bro, or something like that.
Yeah, you did.
And you called me, like, yeah. Dude, what's up?
Yeah.
I was like, nah, bro,
that's
I'm
a
good.
Thing.
I'm just, like, was thinking about you and wanted to send you some love.
That's
you
know? The thing, dude. I was doing that in the Quick Trip parking lot when Reeves pulled up. I was saying goodbye to people. And it wasn't a cry for help. It was like, hey, this ain't got nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
Like, it's over with. Like, I'm at that point. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. So, I mean, which is another reason why I tell people I love them at the end of every conversation, even if it's an awkward, not received well, like, dude, like, what? You love me? Yes, I love you, man, because you never know. And yeah. On that, dude, I want to share this quick little snippet of a story with you if there's time.
Okay.
And I shared this at my cousin's funeral. So since the inception of the Golden Gate Bridge, there's been, I can't remember the exact number of people that have jumped to their death from the Golden Gate Bridge. And in 1981 or 82, there was a man that jumped from the Golden Gate Bridge to his death. And the police, in their course of investigation, went back to his house. They found a note. And on this note, it said, I'm on my way to the Golden Gate Bridge to jump to my death. If one person stops me to check on me or offers me a kind word or a smile, I won't do it. Hmm. And we know how it ended. So, like, you never know the impact. Those hoodies that are, like, everywhere, dear person behind me, those hoodies have snatched me out of a negative headspace. Like, oh, God, that's God speaking to me. So, like, you never know what a check-in or an I love you, bro, placed at the right time, at the right moment, will have on somebody, man, in their life.
Yeah.
Jamie actually stopped me 2 weeks ago. I was at the tattoo shop. I was very impulsive. I was about to get a whole back of my head. He had it drew up. You are enough.